Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 630.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. I've heard of them. And not just them, no, but by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I am joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, how are things going over there in Virginia?
Things are going well.
Yeah.
Enjoying the off-season.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about the season, starting to the back of my mind. You know, we're only a couple weeks away from that exciting holiday of seeing the first college football preview magazine on the shelf.
It's coming. It's coming. Yeah. It's like,
I look forward to it.
I mean, you know, one day it's going to be Red Book and Cosmopolitan. I don't look at magazine racks that often. That was probably 1975, but you know. And the next it's going to be, you know, college football, but preview Athlons and Lindy's and everybody's favorite, the one that tells you how Wake Forest does on artificial turf at night when it's raining in the month of October during a hailstorm on alternate Saturdays. Because that is information that you've got to have.
Got to have it.
People will pay big bucks for that information. And that's actually true. People will pay big bucks for that information. So, gives them an edge. Give them that little edge, man. Let them make some money. Let them hit the big money on that Thursday night game between Iowa State and South Florida. Woo! Well, I spent this past weekend. God, it all kind of runs together, doesn't it? 2 weekends ago now, I was in Chicago. That seems like a few days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago, two weekends ago, I was in Chicago, and that was a great time. And then this past weekend, I did a library event here. But otherwise, not a lot been going on. I've watched some USFL. We'll get to that later, of course. I know everybody's just dying excited for that. By the way, scarcely a week goes by that I don't have to go on Twitter and defend the USFL from somebody whose blazing hot take is, USFL, that thing crapped out 40 years ago. Because this is the same USFL, you know. It's the same one. It's still the same people and all that. No, it's totally different. It has nothing in common other than spring football. So, well, anyway, what do we have to talk about tonight in the Auburn realm, I guess?
We have a few things. We have a grab bag, a potpourri, an assortment of items.
Yeah, we do.
And the first one is...
Yeah.
Activate the portal.
There it is.
And the best kind of portal activation, an incoming portal activation instead of an outgoing portal activation.
Jump gate activated.
There they come.
Right. So Auburn got a transfer, a safety transferred from Iowa State and Craig McDonald.
Wow.
Yeah.
Another defensive back. Hot dog. It does seem like we're just constantly reeling in defensive backs, doesn't it? I don't know.
Well, in a few weeks, when we get to the safety depth chart discussion, you will go, yes, I see why we wanted that Craig McDonald guy.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. We did lose a couple of DBs, including the one that went in the first round, second round.
We lost some cornerbacks and we lost some safeties too, and then we also had some guys that were injured in the spring. So we, you know, we needed some more depth at this position, and Craig McDonald is a bigger guy, so a big physical safety. He was on Iowa State's team for 2 years, but the first year he kind of redshirted, and then last year he played in every game. He had 41 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, and 2 interceptions, and 1 pass broken up.
Nice.
So, again, he wasn't a star, but he was a solid rotation player for a good defense in the Big 12. And I think that's somebody we could use.
No, I'll take bodies. I mean, we definitely need certain players more than others, but, you know, a good player, good solid, fill in the gaps there, that's fine. I don't guess there's been any news on any of the other positions that we're looking for, like offensive line or, well, I guess we're not really looking for offensive line this year, but they're all leaving at once in mass next year, right?
Yeah, I think we're not going to get any offensive linemen now because, again, we have so many seniors. We've talked about that before.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
deters the transfers from coming.
Yeah.
But next year, we're A, going to be, you know, going to every high school recruit in the South and saying, hey, we need offensive linemen. And B, you know, hitting the transfer portal at the same time, saying lots of starting positions available. Come on down.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to do both. But I think in the current season where we're going, we need some kind of complementary pieces. There are no, you know, absolute stars in the transfer portal right now, but there are solid role player guys who could contribute to your team. And I think we could use a couple more of those. Maybe, you know, I think if you're picking the other areas of need, I think we definitely need one more kind of edge rusher, outside linebacker type, because we don't have a lot of depth there.
Right.
And
we got quality what we have, right? Just not a lot of
depth.
Yeah,
no, we have really good players, but don't have any depth there at all, really. So
yeah,
that's a position where we need some depth. And then, you know, maybe maybe another receiver, maybe something else. So, but again, this is the kind of thing with McDonald where, you know, you're getting a guy who has a couple of years left. He's not going, you know, be gone next year. So he's a kind of a good recruit in the transfer portal in the sense that he's got a couple of years to play. He's not some guy like the Georgia receiver transfer we got last year who was only going to be here for one season. So
yeah. And that just, like we were talking about last week, that just never seems to work out anyway. It just doesn't. So especially when it's 1 year, I don't know what the deal is, but receivers more than maybe in some, I don't know, maybe offensive linemen, but if they're really good, but it just always seems like receivers, whether they're transfers or whether they're coming in as freshmen, they always need at least a year or two just to kind of get into the system somehow. I don't know why that is in that particular position, but you know, and they, of course, the last few years, our receivers never really seemed to, get better. Or be able to get open, create separation, anything like that. So, you know, you had to have just a spectacular talent like Seth Williams to even be able to create something on his own, just using his abilities. So, so other areas. Well, what would you say is like the number one area that we have right now? Is it receiver or running back?
I mean, if there was another big receiver, that would be one, and then but also outside the linebacker. Edge rusher, I think, is the other one. So I think those are the two areas we would definitely still be looking for somebody.
How much longer do we have? I mean, isn't there a window on it? Or I see they've changed it all so much the last couple of years that I can't even.
This is where, like, the NCAA is going to do some reform of the transfer portal thing. So the windows are clearer to everyone.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the problem is they made all these big changes at the same time, or in some cases, in because of COVID.
Yeah.
So that just kind of made it all, it kind of went from black and white to just incredibly gray overnight.
Yeah. And some of it wasn't COVID, some of it was them losing lawsuits, but it all happened at the same time.
It all happened kind of at the same time, yeah. So it was like one day it was the way it had always been, and the next day it was just completely different. And, you know, suddenly players could just take an extra year and transfer from here to here and when to where and whatever.
And be immediately eligible.
Yeah, all that kind of happened around the same time, and it just was hard to follow. And then the NIL stuff came in right on top of that, and it's just there's been so much change in the last 2 or 3 years. It's just, it makes your head spin. Well, in basketball, we had a somebody that got away.
Yeah. Our big high-profile recruit, Julian Phillips, chose Tennessee over Auburn last Thursday. And I get it. They had a lot more needs than we did.
Yeah.
They had a lot more empty spots and a lot more need for guys to come and step right away and be main parts of the team, where Auburn's looking at complimentary pieces.
Well, the word on the street, and of course, we here at the AU Wishbone are very big on the word on the street, you know. That's our number one source of sports information for you, is word on the street, man. But is that he got a big NIL deal from, well, now see, it can't be from Tennessee, right? It would be in loose association with his recruitment to Tennessee. Is that vague enough? Yeah.
Yes.
And allegedly, so here's the numbers I saw. You tell me, stop me whenever you want to throw something in here. I have a diatribe. The numbers I saw were the G League allegedly offered him $800,000. Auburn allegedly offered him up to a million, $800,000 to $1 million. And, or again, interests associated with him playing for Auburn. I'm trying to, you know what I'm saying, like, say this properly. Tennessee, interests associated with Tennessee allegedly offered him a $2 million NIL package, and he supposedly, I've seen these quotes, right? I don't know how accurate they are, that he took the money and ran, basically. He went to Tennessee for the cash, the money, and Auburn was allegedly unwilling to go beyond $1 million for him. We felt like at that point we could just find somebody else or whatever. He wasn't that critical to us.
Again, this is funny to say because we're talking about a guy who, you know, until last year would have been the highest ranked recruit ever signed by Auburn. So the fact that the whole, well, we didn't really need him kind of thing is funny. The other thing I'm going to go there. Like, again, he was a complimentary piece. He was not going to start. He was going to be an off the bench piece, you know, maybe the seventh guy or whatever. So off, you know, not even the first guy off the bench. So,
wow.
You know, that is a there's a limit to how much you need that person then, right? And Tennessee, you know, Auburn has one scholarship to give, and then we're completely full. Tennessee has like four scholarships to give when they signed it. They need a bunch of people, and they need guys that can be impact players. You know, we've already got Traore and Broom to combine with the guys we have coming back. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a big piece of it in terms of, I'm always going to put a little grain of salt with the numbers when I hear them like that, how much he really got from these places. But, you know, I did hear that Tennessee offered more NIL money, but I also think they probably offered him more playing time and more touches of the ball.
Yeah,
too.
That's fair. For sure. Well, what kind of got me stirred up yesterday was that people were talking about this and somebody said NIL is just ruining college sports. And that's like the most get off my lawn, yell at the cloud reaction. But I understand people feel that way.
I'm gonna ask that person this question, okay? Why do you think all those players went to Alabama over the years? It was because they love the streets of Tuscaloosa and the vibe.
The streets of Tuscaloosa in color. A Quinn Martin production. Go ahead.
Or was it perhaps because they were induced to sign with the University of Alabama and received Dodge Chargers and their families received employment and other benefits? So the idea that it's, you know, the NIL is terrible. Well, again, wow, a good basketball player went to Tennessee. That's never happened before, you know?
Well, right. I got to get a sound effect of somebody like, y'all got any more of them Dodge Chargers? But I kind of get what they're saying in the sense that they're saying it's turning into like bid for your players and who can throw out the most money as opposed to, you know, whatever. But I think it's always been that way, hasn't it?
It always was. The difference is you didn't have to hear about it or see it before. It was all below ground.
Until somebody got caught.
Again, and then it was, oh, wow, how much did they get? Whatever. But again, that was money was always changing hands. The top players were always getting compensated. There was always bidding wars. Gosh, players switching on signing day. What do you think happened with some of that? So, again, yeah. I get it if you're unhappy with it. But the reality is some of this is just pulled the stuff. There was underground tunnels of money flowing around, and now they're just slightly above ground.
Out in the open.
And you're seeing more of it, and you're like, oh, well, that's not really fun. But here's the deal. I mean, I'm going to – there's some breaking, shocking news here. Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia are going to be good at football in the future. That's what's going to happen. Southern Cal's going to be better. You know, yeah. So it's not –
Well, I think Texas A&M is what's got people aggravated, but somebody can come along and buy themselves a college program when they traditionally haven't been that good.
They've recruited very well over the years.
Hadn't worked yet. Hadn't worked yet, right.
That's what I'm saying. The plan to spend a lot of money has been around a while and hasn't worked yet. The difference is now they can actually aim the money at something more easily.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, my response was simply capitalism gonna capitalism. And I feel like I said either you support adults being compensated for their labor or you don't. If you do, then you're going to get bidding wars. That's just how capitalism works. And if you don't, then you're regulating capitalism and you're getting into the realm of socialism. Some people have an issue with that. I would say that what we had before was communism, which is, you know, from each according to his ability to each according to his need in terms of a grant and aid, and then, you know, a lot of corruption beneath the surface. That's communism right there. So the bad comes with the good, and you just got to pick your poison. Either you want it out in the open and you can decry it, obviously, or you want it hidden and corrupt and under the surface and you can pretend it's not there. So, but capitalism is capitalism, and you take the bad with the good. And it's funny, people can criticize socialism and say they demand free market capitalism until they're outbid for something, and then all of a sudden, oh, we can't have this free market capitalism going on. I can't get outbid. We need reform here. So yeah, suddenly it looks a lot better over there than in the spectrum, doesn't it?
Well, and again, who was crying out about the NIL deal in the NCAA a few weeks ago? The schools that weren't getting any players.
Yeah,
you know. So I just.
Bunch of commies. You know what that is, John. You know what that is.
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
There you go.
And I get it. I your analogy is fine, but I think I would say it was always capitalism.
Yeah.
You just didn't see it and have to hear about it, but it mattered all the same before. I get it. I mean, I'm a purist. I love college football, and I like to think it's sometimes about, you know, the love of the school and the atmosphere and all that kind of stuff. But that's not always what's going on. So
I guess that a lot of these older, more set in their ways, wanted and kind of in denial fans, they have a lot in common with those folks over in Russia that missed their Soviet empire. They all can kind of gather around and sing. Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one. There you go. Oops, wrong thing. Sorry.
Clicking buttons all over the place.
I'm hitting the wrong button. That is, in my opinion, the number one sound clip. I know that most people would say our number one sound clip is
smoke weed every day.
I know it. I know that's the one that people kind of, it's the memorable one that people gravitate to. But I think forever, ever, it's going to be the Soviet national anthem with Bama number one. I
love the Soviet national anthem as a sound clip.
I need to go ahead and put. I don't ever put the words in because it's too much fun to do them every time we do it.
No, don't put the words in.
Yeah, it's better.
It's better live.
It's better live. I agree. Do it live. All right. What's going on with basketball otherwise? Any other news? They're getting ready to go to Israel?
They're trying to decide what they're going to do with this last scholarship, if they're going to continue to recruit people. And again, the interesting thing that's going on is we talked about the transfer portal earlier with football. There's players in the transfer portal in basketball who are in the portal but also declared for the NBA draft. And if they don't get a good enough review from the draft scouts, they could pull out of the draft thing and still be in the portal, right?
It's kind of like the read option, but with transferring.
It's it.
You take the ball.
I'm reading the eyes of the scouts. I've got the ball. I can pitch it or
pull
keep
it back in. Just don't fumble. Didn't our guy just do that? I saw something on Twitter that kind of freaked me out for a half a second that he was
Right. So Flanagan is in there. Like, he's not going to the NBA. He's not going to get a hire.
But I was thinking that the broom guy said something like,
I'm taking my
name out of the draft and I'm going to focus on winning a national championship at Auburn. And I'm like, when was your name in there, sir? What is this?
The rules have changed a little bit about that. It used to be like if you were in the draft, it was an absolutely done thing.
You're done. Yes.
And now it's a you can explore it and pull your name out up until a certain deadline. And so Flanagan is in there right now. He's getting evaluated. But some of it is they just evaluate you, and they evaluate a lot of the top guys and say, you need to work on these 10 things to be a higher draft pick. And the players go back and work on this.
All right. So it's like a free evaluation, and then they can...
Yeah, but they're not doing it to just anybody. You got to be close to an NBA-level player for them to even think about it.
Right.
Because they're doing it for them. They're not doing it for you.
So Lior Berman is not going to get a quick draft evaluation.
He's not invited.
Oh, man. That ain't right. He's going to torch him this fall and winter from three. He could be our guy we need to shoot the threes.
He's going to torch some future YMCA rec leagues.
You know that he'd get out there in the intramurals, though, and just dominate like Michael
he'd
Jordan.
He'd annihilate people.
That's so true.
Well, you know the walk-ons beat the football team, right? The walk-on basketball players played basketball against the football team and beat them.
I would hope so. They're basketball players.
But, it was, you know. Against the full scholarship football players.
Right. Well, I don't remember if you did. I played intramural basketball at Auburn for a year. And there are some guys out there that you're like, how are you not playing for Sonny or Tommy Joe or something, you know? So just barely missed out, you know, on the scholarship. They'd rather come to Auburn. A lot of them that we would play with, they chose to come to Auburn and play intramural rather than take that full basketball scholarship to Jacksonville State or Troy or something back then. So they were really good, and I was not. All right, so we have a conversation scheduled tonight about scheduling, scheduled conversation.
And this came up because last week I mentioned this, and you were like, I'm not sure what you're talking about. So I wanted to bring this up because it's a topic that's happening right now in the ACC meetings and other conference meetings. And when the SEC meetings happen and they start talking about the future football schedule, these topics are going to come up. So I wanted to prepare you and our audience for these things. So I want to give some background about the current conference schedule setup the SEC has. Why does it exist this way, and how do we feel about it? So we play an 8-game conference schedule.
Yep.
You play one permanent opponent.
Yep.
Everybody in your division.
Yep.
And then two rotating opponents from the other side.
And they've tweaked it and changed it many times over the years, going back to when there were 10 teams and there was no conference championship game. All the changes started when we added Arkansas and South Carolina and created the SEC championship game. Then they've tweaked it many a time since then.
And this is important because before that time, conferences could not have championship games. And then they said, if you had divisions, you could have a conference championship game. Like 12 teams and divisions, you could have a conference championship game. And so then conferences made divisions so that they could have a conference.
Starting with the SEC. SEC invented that whole thing just to get around the letter of the law.
It was a rule that was really in effect for the smaller conferences. That before that, like the smaller conferences, 1AA, they were doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so then the SEC in 1992 invited Arkansas and South Carolina, created two divisions of whatever, six teams each at the time, right?
Yeah, two 6-team divisions, the East and the West.
And then you were playing five teams, you know, and
that was, by the way, that was Roy Kramer, the famous Roy Kramer maneuver.
Right. So, but the divisions were the whole big thing, right? And the whole thing was set up so that we kept a permanent opponent. We could keep Georgia. Alabama could keep Tennessee. And then we could rotate and occasionally play the other opponents.
Well, originally you got two permanent.
Yeah.
And we had Florida. That was when we lost Tennessee as a regular opponent.
Yes.
We kept Georgia and Florida. We lost Tennessee. And then a couple of years later, they changed it again where you only kept one permanent, so we lost Florida. I think the last year we played Florida regularly was 2002 down there. 2003, we didn't play them for the first time in 100 years.
That's right. So then we added A&M and Missouri, but we kept the same basic deal.
That was 10 years later, 2012. Mm-hmm. 92
to 2000. Basic deal.
Yeah.
So, and the problem with that current structure is that we don't play the other teams in the East enough.
Did I say 10 years later? I'm losing my mind. 20 years later.
Yes.
We went 20 years with the 12-team conference after being 10 for the longest time. Yeah. And then now it's 14, and now it's going to go to 16, just after, so it's going to be like a 12-year window this time of 14 teams, and then we'll go to 16. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get my numbers straight because I realized I said something really stupid.
So, and the biggest problem with the current structure is we don't play the other teams in the East enough. We don't play Florida enough. We don't play Tennessee enough. We don't play Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky enough. So, and those, and because it's so rare and so stale, those matchups would could be really fun and interesting don't happen enough. And so we don't get enough of that as fans. So now this week, in the last week or two, the NCAA said you don't need divisions anymore to have a
conference. They talked about that for a while, right? It seemed like that
had
kind of been going out.
Now they passed the rule and said you don't have to have divisions.
Okay.
You can have a conference championship game without divisions. We don't care. So now the need to have the two divisions and that kind of scheduling model based on the two divisions is gone.
Hallelujah.
It does not exist. And so we're in a situation where we have Texas and Oklahoma coming. There's going to be a...
Whoa, No. Back up. Say the first part about the divisions.
The divisions are gone. We don't need that type of scheduling.
Okay, now say the other part.
And Texas and Oklahoma are coming.
Okay, there we go. I just want to be clear.
Just wanted clarity.
Okay, go ahead.
So from a scheduling standpoint, there's going to be a lot of talk about this. And there's already talk in other conferences about them changing their football schedules not this current fall, but fall of 23, a different football schedule.
Right.
And so, the SEC is going to talk about this in a few weeks when they meet. And here's some of the things that are on the table, okay? The first one is go to 9 conference games. So,
yes, because then, well, depending on, well, see, here's the thing. If you keep the current scheduling model, I want 9 games because that means we play the other teams, that means we play the teams in the East that are not Georgia more often, right? I want to play Missouri, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, but mostly Missouri more often. And
right, but
so I don't, if you go to pods, then the 9 team doesn't matter anymore necessarily as much because you've shaken it all up anyway.
Yeah, but why? Okay, so why would the SEC go to 9 games? Money.
Well, that's the answer to everything, of course.
It is the answer because the TV network would give a bunch more money because they're creating a bunch more content.
Right, right.
So That's why they would do it. But
what if we take away
a week game to go to an SEC game?
I was going to say, okay, well, what if we gave away our Clemson, Washington, Oregon game to get the SEC game, Vanderbilt?
Again, so we just went through that exercise a week or two ago. You're talking about giving up the Miami, UCLA future games
in order to play Vanderbilt or Missouri. I don't think that would give more money. I think that would cost money. So they're not going to do
it. Give the SEC more money.
Right, right.
Auburn might not make more money, but the SEC as a whole would make more money.
Because networks would
pay more for the surety of that.
If we continue to use the Woodward and Bernstein method here of follow the money, then the money will dictate that we keep playing that opening week out of conference big Power 5 game and that we trade in the Citadel for Missouri or Kentucky
whatever. That's what's going to happen. We're going to give up a game where we're paying a couple $100,000 to Citadel to play, you know, Missouri. And so in what I want to say is, as an Auburn fan, like that, you know, it's better and that there's more SEC football and we love SEC football. But as from an Auburn fan perspective, that's a tougher schedule and our schedule is brutal already.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I have no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last thing we need is another. If we talk about the pod system, right, that's kind of the thing that we're looking at. And if we talk about that, then it's just going to come down, for me at least, it's going to come down to, does the pod arrangement create the turnover in matchups I'm looking for regardless of the number of conference games? Right. In other words, if we go to pods and we keep 8 conference games, does that solve the problem without having to add a 9th game? But if going to pods doesn't change anything, then I'd just as soon go to 9 games, regardless of whether we're doing divisions or pods. And if you go to 9 games, the division thing matters even less, right? Because when you go to 9 games, there's you and the 9 teams you play. That's 10 teams being occupied on your schedule out of 16. Well, here's the thing. When you go to 16 teams in the league, an 8-game schedule means you're not even playing half the league.
That's right.
Oh, man. This is...
So let's get into it then, right? So there's 2 systems we're going to talk about. The first one is a pod system, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a pod is basically a mini division.
Yeah.
Okay? It's a group of like 4 teams, and those 4 teams all play each other, but then they also play everybody else. So in an 8-game conference schedule, you would play 3 games against your pod mates and 5 against the rest of the league. In a 9-game conference schedule, you'd play 3 games against your pod mates and 6 against the rest of the league. So here's the way the math works. Once the SEC goes to 16 teams in a couple of years, you have yourself, and then you have your 3 pod mates, right? Let's say that. So then that leaves 12 teams that you're not playing. If you play 9 conference games, you have your 3 pod games and your 6 rotating games, 6 games a year, you play 6-6-6-6 over a 4-year period. You could play everybody in the conference home and away.
That's perfect. That's the way to do it. That's perfect.
So here's the
downside. But it's a 9-game schedule, right?
Yes, that's a 9-game schedule when we get to Oklahoma, Texas side,
right?
To get everybody in a 4-year period,
right?
But here's the downside I don't love about the pod thing. Okay, there's 2 things. One is, you know, you have to come up with kind of the perfect pod.
Yes.
Right. That makes sense for everybody who's in them.
It's a challenge, right?
I'm delighted to move forward and do away with the divisional structure, which has kind of hemmed us in this schedule. But when you do away with the division structure, the big challenge is who goes to the championship game.
Well, and the other big challenge is there's only one Vanderbilt. So how does Alabama make its 3 other team pod when there's only one Vanderbilt? That hems them in. They have to actually pick somebody else. So
so it's fair. That's a big problem, right?
You got to have a overall record, right? And then head-to-head, and you have a bunch of tiebreakers.
Right. So it's got to be conference record, head-to-head, and then tiebreakers. Mm-hmm. Because in these scenarios, you could have teams that didn't play each other, weren't in the same pod, didn't play each other, and they both ended up with the same conference record.
Yeah.
And then you're down to tiebreakers and stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah.
To see who gets in or who's whatever. So,
which is kind of what we used to have with the Sugar Bowl.
Sure.
You got down to flip a coin or who was here last with the there was a tiebreaker with the Sugar Bowl back in the 10 team days, which was who's been in it more recently, we take the other one. There was also the who's higher rated in the polls. So they had a lot of interesting tiebreakers for that thing back then.
So here's the other non-pod one that I actually like better at this point.
All right.
And it's the same thing, except each SEC team has 3 permanent opponents, but our permanent opponents are not the same as anybody else's, right? So there's not a pod. Our permanent opponents could be like Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi State. okay? Alabama's could be us, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, you know? And Georgia's would. Could be us, Florida, Tennessee.
As long as everybody's covered by everybody else, it would work. It's like, instead of little huddles, you get almost like a circle with a hand on the shoulder of the guy in front of you, and everybody's got a hand on their shoulder, even if it's not the same hands, right?
That's right. As long as everybody's going to have three opponents, you know, for some of them, it's going to make less sense, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Missouri, for example. Who, it's not like Missouri's going to say, we've been playing Florida for 800 years. You can't break up this storied rivalry. Like, no, you're Missouri, for crying out loud.
Right. It could be Missouri, could be Arkansas, you know, Kentucky, Oklahoma.
I did one recently that was very popular, remember, on social media.
Yes.
Of the animals and wildlife. That one, people were like, this is shockingly accurate. Remember that? People like this. I had cats. There were four. I had dogs. There were four. I had, what was it? People and natural phenomena or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else or something else, something like that.
The other one was like edible animals or whatever.
Yeah, edible, right. Edible creatures, yeah. Things that are good barbecued or grilled or something, yeah. But I mean, there's teams that it just is not going to. That's the thing. Is like all SEC teams are not created equal and never have been. And we can't pretend like they are. We just have to work around it. Because not everybody has the Iron Bowl. Not everybody has the Egg Bowl. Not everybody has the world's largest cocktail party. Not everybody has that storied Alabama-Vanderbilt rivalry, you know. And so you have to find a way to fit South Carolina in, to fit Missouri in. You know.
I don't know how it happened that they got Vanderbilt to start on their schedule three times, but that's what happened.
That's right. That's how it goes. Yeah. This time we'll get them. Yeah. I mean, you know, you kind of like have the core teams that get together and play each other, Auburn, Alabama, LSU, and Florida and Georgia kind of in a circle kind of. And then you have the peripheral teams that are both on the periphery geographically and historically, like Texas, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and
I just love the idea for a football player that you could sign as a freshman and play home and away every team during your four-year period.
Yeah.
And you will get to play in every single stadium.
Oh, yeah, heck yeah.
And they will all come to your stadium in a four-year period. I mean, imagine that from a season ticket perspective.
Oh, that'd be so
great.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. To think that I would get to go see Auburn play in Missouri – like what, once every 4 years?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. And imagine this scenario. So we have 16 teams, including these new teams, and we divide it up, and you end up, let's just say that somehow we did keep the two divisions, but you had one division with Texas, Texas A&M, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and so on. And let's say after a few years, they decided they could do just as well on their own, and they split off eight of them, and they could, like, call it the Big Eight or something. Wouldn't that be interesting? Just create their own conference
in
Texas.
Or the Southwest Conference.
They could call it the Southwest Conference or the Big Eight or whatever, and that would be, like, a whole new thing. They could even play in the Cotton Bowl.
Crazy town.
Oh, man. A whole new, brand new thing they've never seen before in college football. Yeah. They could even invite like SMU over and Baylor and TCU and just Houston, Rice. Yeah, the Southwest Conference. That's a great name. I'm surprised nobody's ever done that before. We're gonna get emails. You idiots! You young bucks don't even remember there used to be a Southwestern Conference. What's the matter with you people? There used to be. Yeah, back in my day, the Southwestern Conference, they played without helmets, Johnny. They ran around giving each other concussions, and they liked it that way. They liked those concussions that way.
To reflect back on our earlier argument, one of the reasons that conference doesn't exist anymore is because they got caught paying their players too often.
And now that's all solved. You could bring back the Southwestern Conference, and they could keep the same exact business model they used to have, and it would be fine. It would be fine. And if anybody told them, you can't do it that way, you need to do it the way that it's supposed to be done, the Southwestern Conference could answer,
and that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
I think we've solved it. There you go.
I think we have. So anyway, there it that's is. Your little schedule primer as we head into the SEC off-season meetings in a few weeks. You're going to hear all that stuff, so...
And, you know, you had the question, if it was up to you, what would you choose? And you said you kind of like that not – you kind of like the not-a-pod pod, right?
Yes.
Not-a-pod pod. And I would agree. I mean, I am for anything that gets us to playing teams more often. And if we get to play Florida 2 out of every 4 years and Tennessee 2 out of every 4 years, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Bring it.
Oh, that'd be incredible. That'd be incredible, yeah. Well – I've been working on a new bit, but I only came up with one line for it. So I'm just going to throw that out here. Here you go. This is just kind of a preview of a bit I'm probably not actually going to do. But I thought about, and my wife suggested if we were going to do the most interesting coach in the world, we could do the most interesting mascot. So the only line I came up with for this week over dinner was... He has a vocabulary of 350,000 words that he never says out loud. He's the most interesting mascot in the world. There you go. That was all I came up with. That's it. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah. That was the best one. So there you go. That's how bad I was tonight coming up with stuff. That's right. Oh, well, I guess we got to quickly squeeze this in real quick.
This is the USFL report.
The gun went off again. Dang it. Birmingham won again. They are undefeated. And they signed a former Alabama running back, Bo Scarborough. So there you go.
This has been the USFL Report.
Gun keeps going off. So there you go. Yeah, Birmingham 5-0. Only undefeated team. Second week in a row undefeated. They beat the Philadelphia Stars. They got Bo Scarborough having tough yards at running back. I don't mind Alabama players once they come to a pro team and are like doing things to help team I'm cheering for. That's fine. You know, good for them. Get them away from Alabama. All right, so we have a football position group review for this week. Who do we have this week?
And this week we're continuing our process through the roster and looking at the linebackers. So, again, we play kind of a 3-4 on defense, but we're talking about the two inside linebackers, those positions. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're looking at. So we've lost two players off last year. Two very productive,
very
reliable veteran players.
Yes.
Jacoby McClain and Chandler Wooten, who were both kind of team leaders and made a lot of plays the last few years for us. So there's some, you know, there's a lot of playing time and a lot of plays that are missing with those guys gone. So the returning guys on the depth chart, number one is Owen Papo, who was injured this spring and had some surgery. He'll be back full speed in the fall. But obviously there's some other guys that got to step up and play around him. So
it feels like Wesley Steiner, on the one hand, has never played. And on the other hand, it feels like he's been on the team for 100 years. He's one of those guys that Gus brought in kind of toward the end that was supposed to be really good. Or I guess it was really more Kevin Steele. And he just hasn't gotten to play much.
Yeah, I think we've been spoiled a little bit the last few years with how much depth and talent we've had at linebacker. But also, I think the shift to this defense – created the situation where we used to play three linebackers all the time, and now we're kind of just playing two. And so there's less playing time to go around. And so when you had, you know, Jacoby McClain, Chandler Wooten, and Owen Papo, there wasn't a lot of playing time to go around. So I think, and we had good guys before that. You know, we had KJ Britt and we had some other guys ahead of him. So I think that really was a big factor. But you're right. We recruited this class of talented linebackers, Steiner, Cam Riley, Desmond Tindall, and those guys are all juniors now, but they haven't played a lot. But it's their time. Those three guys, you know, at least two of them are going to be playing a lot. And so they need to step up and make plays. And I think it's probably going to be Steiner and Riley, but it could be Tisdall. Tisdall's more of a traditional middle linebacker type, I think. But they got to get out there and make plays. You know, Steiner was a high-profile recruit because he was a big, very athletic, explosive guy with a lot of measurable athletic things that other
and supposed to be
wanted.
Really smart.
Yeah, a smart guy that could have gone to, you know, anywhere to college. And so I think those guys can make plays and can step in and do the job. Behind them, you know, we have Joko Willis, who's a, you know, a JUCO signee who's still only a sophomore, and then Cameron Brown, who's Derek Brown's younger brother.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the new guy front, we have kind of two freshman signees and a transfer at this position. We have the transfer is a guy named Eugene Asante, who went to North Carolina and played a couple years there, played a little bit, solid player, not, you know, a huge difference maker, but a good, solid player who has a little bit of experience coming to Auburn as a, you know, he'll be a junior. And so I think you could throw him in the mix with Steiner and Riley and those guys as a guy that could get on the field this fall and help a bit. And then we have two signees. Powell Gordon is an Auburn High guy who's a, you know, a smaller, kind of more outside run-around linebacker type in space linebacker, I mean. And then the other one is Robert Woodyard, who was the highest-rated signee in the last recruiting class and a guy that Auburn got away from Alabama as a kind of a traditional middle linebacker, solid recruit. So I think Woodyard is the future and kind of the, you know, KJ Britt middle linebacker mold and a guy that a thumper in the real middle of the defense. And but I think he and Woodyard and Gordon will both play on special teams this fall and could get some occasional playing time and, you know, in different games. But it's going to be tough for them to get a lot of playing time, but you never know. I mean, they're both talented guys. So so that's the linebackers. I feel pretty good about that depth compared to other positions.
It is kind of funny to think that we could go from a 4-3 to a 3-4 and yet be playing fewer linebackers because a 3-4, the outside linebackers are basically not even linebackers anymore in this day and age. They used to be, but they're really not anymore. They're more they're defensive ends.
That's right. So they're I mean, they're still kind of that Kevin Greenish outside linebacker pass rusher type. The Andre Bruce type. So
right.
And that's kind of what we have out there. And so those are the guys we're going to talk about next week, and you'll see why we need a transfer of that position because it'll be a pretty short conversation.
Yeah, boy, that's not good. Well, we certainly could trade a couple of inside linebackers because we've got so many for so few positions.
And that's where, like, again, I think, like Joko Willis has played a little bit in the spring and outside, and some of these other guys could go over there occasionally if they had to. So
I don't know. So what do you think? What's your evaluation, your final word on this on the inside linebackers then? I mean, you think it's going to be, I mean, Papo just can't stay healthy. He's so good when he's healthy, but he's just never healthy. And Wesley Steiner is smart, athletic. I mean, we've got pieces.
Yeah. I think we got a lot of talent at this position. I think, again, I'm not worried about the position. I think we're going to get production and good play out of these guys. And we have depth. If somebody gets Papo gets banged up, I think we got some other guys that could step in and make stuff happen. That's where a guy like Asante is important. If Papo got hurt and missed a few games, you know, that's another guy who's had game experience, you know, who's played in some games who could step in and play.
And I get to call him Armand.
You will.
Armand Asante. That'll be exciting. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, it's weird. We you know, it's if you look back over the last 20, 30 years of Auburn football or more, we'll have one or two positions that'll be really, really deep and good and others that are just inexplicably vacant. And then it just shifts around all the time, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we had no linebackers. Yes. And then Kevin Steele kind of started bringing them in and suddenly we had great linebackers. That was so weird.
But it was a change. It was a focus and different.
Yeah.
And now we're in a different place.
Yeah. That's right. So now I worry that when these guys are gone, we're going to have two stars out there in the middle linebacker position or something.
Well, again, I think we're not there because like Woodyard we just signed was the highest profile recruit in the class. I think it's still a position where players know they come to Auburn and do well.
Yeah, I hope so. All right. Well, so next up, the edge/outside linebackers.
Yep.
We don't have a whole lot of positions left to cover, do we?
Nope, that and secondary.
Well, there we go. Okay. All right, well, we got to quickly thank our patrons. And by quickly, I mean as quickly as we can, considering that it starts becoming a circus at this point. I like it. That's like, I was just telling my wife earlier when we were talking about the show, I said that it's funny that the most exciting portion of the show has become like the patrons section, just because it's become a circus with all the wacky names and stuff. And I love it. I love it. I think people enjoy it. And I want to continue as long as we can. So we have to thank our patrons. The point of it is we don't have any ads. You may have noticed listening to the show so far that we don't have ads. We don't give you a 30-second or minute long ad at the beginning. We don't give you ads in the middle. We don't give you ads at the end even. We don't have ads. And instead, we depend on our listeners to support the program and keep it going. And in exchange for that, among various other things, like, for example, we have a Fantasy Formula One league. There is nothing to report this week because the Miami Grand Prix was a week ago. They did not race this week, and they're going to be in Spain and Catalonia this coming weekend. So we'll have a good one coming up. Relatively good. Spain's where they bring out a lot of their new mid-season replacement parts and upgrades and stuff, so that should be fun. But we'll have a Formula One update next week. Otherwise, we have to thank the folks who keep the lights on at the White Rocket Studios. They include Samuel Salvadori, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham. And by the way, you can put whatever you like in the name blank and within certain number of characters, spaces, reason. And I will read it as long as I can. And people have been putting sound effects, soundboard clips on there too. So knock yourself out. Have some fun with it. Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC. It's always hate week, says Logan Chilton. I hear you. Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kanjian, Ben Bloodworth, Bruce Isn't Harsin Around. I'm going to move the soundboard out of the way because I can't see what I'm doing over here. I lost my place. Chris Hilton.
Please clap.
Yeah, there we go. Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston. I'm a failure. I will have adult grandchildren before the insulation goes in. Yeah, thanks, Bob. Jacob and Robin Fleming. John, I think they just had a wedding anniversary, those wacky kids. John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, I'll Go Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Reynolds.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
God, I love that one so much. Rich Reimer, Sarah Browns, Steve Harlan, thank goodness... Thank goodness for Win Carroll, because
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
That's what I hear, yeah. Theodore Gary, there goes Davis. War Eagle always, Warhammer 6, I hear you, man. WDE Richie.
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
Boom, 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 boom. Wes Atkinson. And Will John and Van have a 10-year anniversary special? John?
Sure.
Yeah, it'll be, I think, like in the middle of football season this fall, right?
I think we should replay our early episodes.
Oh, God.
Because I know the current fans want to listen to us discuss the 2012 season.
Oh, man. This is the time of year, actually. We're kind of coming up on it. It's usually like May and June. In the past, that we've done all kind of stuff, right? Like we've had interviews. Live interviews. We've done like historical games. We've done some game reenactments and some game simulations. We've done all kinds of stuff. During COVID, we actually like played the 2004 versus 2010 teams. Yeah, if you're one of our newer listeners in like the last year and a half or so, go back in our archives. We actually did an entire episode during the COVID lockdown in 2020 where we simulated like every drive of a 2004 Auburn versus 2010 Auburn game. And we actually played it all the way to the end and who won. And I thought that was like...
I forgot about that. That was a great episode.
I thought that was one of the better things we did, especially during COVID, right? Where we were just like trying to make stuff up.
It was good creative stuff.
Yeah, we did some good stuff. That was kind of our version of like the Marble Grand Prix that we're on YouTube when people were locked down and couldn't do sports. Yeah. So yes, we will do a 10-year anniversary special. We'll have to figure out what it'll be. William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, a retired Kim E. in Galveston, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, your College Bowl Pick'em champion, Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Dibama, helping Van upgrade his insulation. There's two different people whose thing is about my insulation. It's so weird. Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams is pretty sure he had one or more classes at Auburn with fellow patron Rob Morgan. Well, that's awesome. You guys are both really cool, and I'm glad that's cool to find out. Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, John, you and I had a couple of classes together too. Several, in fact. And of course, Molly Ewan. Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle 87, insert favorite soundboard audio here. And I like this because I always get to pick one that I haven't gotten to play in a while. How about this one?
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
There we go. I haven't done that one in a while.
Haven't heard that in a while?
No, not since old Schwartz graduated. Oh, here we go. I'm prepared this time. AJ Herman, insert this soundbite.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
There it is.
Come after me.
Oh, sorry.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
There, I did it twice by accident, but I guess I'll say it's just because I didn't do it last time. So I've made up for not playing it the last time. I lost my place. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brian Albanese, Sebron, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, and finally, our last few, Daniel Barnett, Elizabeth Donald, got to get better at... my soundboard has gotten so messed up.
We got to get better at celebrating.
I just love that clip. I broke Van's soundboard last week, so I'll be boring this week. I appreciate that. I want early access to the basketball book. John and I have just been discussing that in the last week or so, and we have a plan. Much like the Cylons, we have a plan. We'll see if it comes together. Much like Hannibal and Face and BA, we have a plan. We'll see if it comes together. We'd love it if it came together. I'll buy this for $1. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schenker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains.
Someone knows. God knows.
AKA Auburn Dad for Life. Loving Auburn means you have to
smoke weed every day.
I didn't realize that, but I guess it's just one of those things. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright. All right, Kathy, you're on the clock. Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, the always amazing Ruth and Darren. Spanky, having trouble with my bracket. Who knows?
Someone knows. God knows.
That one just gets a lot of attention. Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis. Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family. This name is brought to you by Bubba's Discount Tire and Tax Services. By the way, I did find all of my old... I'll play it in just a second for you. Trevor Johnson, TV's Darren... I like it. We've got TV's Darren Pyle support... because my name continues on Twitter to be TV's Van Allen Plexico. Brant Rumble and Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. And, of course, Boris's name also continues to be TV's Boris the Tiger. I will find it in... Oh, wait, you know what? I think I have it here. Here it is.
Joe's Barbecue and Foot Massage. Joe's Barbecue and Foot Massage.
There you go. I kind of want to bring that back. I don't know.
John. I'm just shaking my head.
John forgets sometimes this is an audio show mostly, and so he gives me some great reactions, and you guys don't know it at all, but I enjoy it. I'll tell you, I do enjoy your reactions, John, even if nobody hears them. So... All right. It is time for Guess the Game. You ready for Guess the Game this week?
Bring it on.
All right. Here we... Oh, crap. I messed it all up. Here we go.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 52. Guess the Game number 52 is brought to you by Cameron Kirsch. And let's get to it. Now, Cameron very kindly sent me pre-edited audio. So you'll hear the audio. It happens in about three parts, and I've sort of faded them in and out so they all flow together as one. You'll hear the fade-ins and fade-outs, but basically it's edited down. You'll get the picture. Here's what Cameron sent me. It's good stuff. Let's give it a listen.
Now the young kicker. For the tie. From the left hash. And he slaps it through.
I think there was some movement there. I don't know if it was on Auburn or...
We had an illegal snap against the offense. There's no play.
Well, that means maybe some movement of the football from the long snapper there that caused Auburn to actually move.
From that left hash, now for a 26-yarder for a tie. Auburn wins it in overtime.
All right, I'll see you in the hint file.
All right, so here's the clues we got out of that.
Okay.
Brent Musburger.
Yes.
Calling the game, the venerable Brent Musburger, so an older game.
You are looking live at some place in the United States.
An overtime game.
Was that not Kirk Herbstreit with him?
It sounded like Herbstreit, but I'm not positive it was.
Right.
Okay. It sounded like a young Herbstreit. So not sure whether it was an SEC game or not, but an overtime game. Auburn's not been in that many overtime games.
Of significance.
Right. And we won because of a penalty on the other team's field goal attempt to tie.
You know what I'm going to tell you? When I first heard it and realized it was a pretty big game and it was coming down to trouble kicking, my first thought was 2004 LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the end where, we missed an extra point and then they called a penalty on LSU and then we got to kick it. But that was the other team kicking.
Yeah, but we won that game 10-9 or whatever,
right,
in regulation, right?
Yes.
So
it's not that game.
It's not that game. We had the original overtime game against Georgia. It's not that game.
Not that game.
We had an overtime game against Arkansas. A Gus, I believe, three or four overtime game against Arkansas.
That was the 2015 game that if we'd won it, we would have been 8-5, like, every freaking year and never had that 7-6 year.
Right. But because we lost, I don't think it's that, right?
Right.
So
let me ask you a question.
All right.
In the 2010 season, we had several close calls, right?
Yeah.
What was the one we came the closest to losing?
Clemson or South Carolina. So we went to overtime in 2010
mm-hmm.
against Clemson.
They got off to a big lead, and then we came back and tied it, or took the lead, and then they came back and tied it, and it went to overtime. Do you remember they threw that pass that if the guy had caught it, we would have lost? Because they were going mm-hmm. second. They were going second, and we kicked a field goal. They threw a pass, and it hit the fingertips of their receiver, and he didn't catch it. That would have cost us the game. We would have lost the game and maybe not played for the national championship. That's how close. And then ended up being fourth down, and they needed a touchdown to win, a field goal to tie, because we were up by three. And what did they do? A touchdown by them, and they won. A field goal by them, and they tied. And what happened?
Well, they tried the field goal kick, and they had the penalty.
Yeah, and they ended up missing the retry.
Yeah.
I think it's Clemson.
I like that. Clemson, 2010.
All right, let's hear the hint, and then we'll go with it.
Not a whole lot of bleeps to take out, but we'll do that, and let's go once more for the hint file.
Now the young kicker. Catanzaro for the tie from the left hash. And he slaps it through.
think there was some movement there. I don't know if it was on Auburn or Clemson.
We had an illegal snap against the offense. There's no play.
Well, that means maybe some movement of the football from the long snapper there that caused Auburn to actually move.
Catanzaro from that left hash now for a 26-yarder for a tie. Auburn wins it in overtime.
All right, gentlemen, I'll see you in the answer file.
Two things about that game. One, the enduring image of that Clemson quarterback who we beat nearly to death. Nick Fairley about beat him like a rented mule in that game. And when they missed that field goal, he just like grabbed his helmet and smashed it down on the ground and was just like, ah, you know. And the other thing is that was the most recent time we beat Clemson.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. After beating them since the Eisenhower administration. We did not lose to Clemson from like 1952 to 2011. But good old Barrett Trotter did not come through for us. All right, so I think we got it. Let's go ahead and get the answer. We'll be right back.
All right, guys, if you figured out that this is the Auburn versus Clemson overtime win in 2010, then you got it right. I want to thank Cameron Kirsch for sending that in once again. We appreciate it. If you have a file to send in for Guess the Game, you can send them to me on social media at Yard Sale Artist. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email me like Cameron did at Jared. That's J-A-R-R-O-D at theyardsaleartist.com. Speaking of sending in files, I sent Van a new file he could add to his soundboard last week, but he didn't play it on the show, so I think I should play it here, and that way you guys know that it's available. So if you want to use it as your patron name, you can. So maybe we should give that a listen right about now.
As much as I hate the idea of being a van guy, it's a lot better than hanging out here with the nocturnal dirt people.
Yeah, I think people are going to like that one. All right, guys. Great. I hope you had fun. I will catch you next time. John Van Vored.
It's just you, me, and the nocturnal dirt people, John.
That's it.
Isn't that crazy, though? I mean, we think about... I know that there will be people that say, oh, the Clemson game wasn't the one we came the closest to losing. But Oregon, we were tied. If we missed our field goal against Oregon, that game goes to overtime. Kentucky, if we missed that field goal, the game goes to overtime. Clemson, though, they missed winning by a fingertip and then would have gone to overtime if they had made that field goal.
If they hadn't had the penalty.
Yes, if they had the penalty. So I think the Clemson game was the one that was the closest the entire season. Okay. I mean, even Alabama, we were ahead at the end for like the last 5 minutes of the game or 10 minutes of the game. We were ahead, you know. It didn't come down to overtime or anything. And that's funny, too. It's weird to think about the comeback, the 2010 Alabama game, and say that wasn't even like the third closest game. I mean, in score it was. But we took the lead, and Alabama never threatened again. You know, we just basically ran the last 5 minutes of that game out.
Yeah.
So we weren't gnawing our fingernails to the bone at the end. First half, yes. But second half, you know, once we kind of took the lead. So, yeah. Okay. So, all right. That was Guess the Game. I guess our last thing for tonight.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Please clap.
All right. Soundboard up. First one is from a friend of the podcast, and the subject line is, this is a USFL podcast now, right?
Ooh.
He says, I
like it.
I'm going to read it as written.
Okay.
Drum roll and fanfare.
Bah, 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 bah.
This is the USFL report.
Yes.
Cannon fire. The Birmingham Stallions may win the 2023 Super Bowl.
Yes.
Drum roll and fanfare. This has been the USFL report. Cannon fire. Jeb quote, please clap.
Oh, that's... I love it.
Please clap.
And he goes that's on to fantastic. Say, in Auburn news, softball has taken a page from football and will be playing Clemson this weekend. because even changing sports, Clemson, much like Thanos, is inevitable. The other two opponents of the Clemson Regional are UNC Wilmington and our game one opponent, Louisiana. UNC Wilmington should be an easy win, but Louisiana is sneaky good. In the actual rankings, Auburn is higher than Louisiana, but according to the NCAA RPI adjusted rankings, Louisiana is actually ranked higher than Auburn. Louisiana is 27, Auburn is 32. I think we win a close first game against UL, but being realistic, we'd have to beat either UL or Clemson or possibly both twice to advance to the final, and I just don't see it happening. Just my thoughts. We'll see this weekend. Let's do this thing, ladies. Thanks. Cato, the embodiment of the Michael Scott quote, no question about it, I'm ready to get hurt again.
I love it. Love it, Cato. I had it. He threw me with that last bit. But no, that was very, very good. That was good. It'll come to me again in a second, but yeah.
All right. So next question is from...
Wait, time out. I got it. I'll lose it. Every time I hear Louisiana, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. There has to be a city there. You know what I mean? I'm not used to them just being the University of Louisiana. I spent my entire life them being Louisiana Lafayette, Louisiana Monroe, you know, whatever, Northeast Louisiana, Southwest Louisiana, and all of a sudden they're just Louisiana. And I'm just it's like their nickname should be the University of Louisiana Other Shoes, because I'm waiting for the other. I'm like, at where? At which one? You know what I mean? So I think they're Lafayette, aren't they?
Lafayette's the one that tries to be big and make you drop the initials.
Pretending like they're just... Okay, got it. Okay, moving on.
All right, and next one comes from a patron of the podcast, Auburn Dad for Life.
Yes.
Who says, do you think the Auburn administration should start thinking about adding a class like educational development or sports science to the degree fields? With all the recent transfers being found to be ineligible to transfer to Auburn because they had these degrees at other institutions, and Vanderbilt was one of the schools where there were some of these majors, but you can't come to Auburn due to not having these majors to transfer. They can't advance. So it basically puts our school at a sports disadvantage because they lack the majors that some of these other schools do, and so transfer players are at a disadvantage. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I think there's a balance. I think you need to have things that are legitimate that would be attractive to if you're trying to get those kind of players, but you don't want to like have things that are questionable just to try to lure in big recruits, right? It just needs to be like a middle ground.
I agree. Again, recruits are not the only students transferring. If this is a big problem, the loss of credits or a transfer for other students, then we need to do something about that. I think that part matters.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question is from Carl Drucker.
Yes.
Who says, super speculative and probably way too many variables to answer, but here I go. If Harsin wins 7, 8, 9 games in the next 3 seasons, beating Bama and Georgia 1 each, and Pearl gets to a tournament and gets to the Sweet 16 twice and the Elite 8 once, combined with 2 more first-round picks in the same 3-year period, is there a pendulum swing away from football as the premier fan attraction getter? And does that make Auburn basketball fans just dirty Bambers in orange and blue? Yes, awful grammar. Carl Von Druck.
It's something I think about. I don't think that – I think you'd have to go on a historic run that includes a couple of national championships to really put a dent in football. I just – for all that we love what Bruce is doing, and we do, and for all that we just go bananas for basketball, and we've even written a book now about it, football is king at Auburn, and it would take a seismic shift over a prolonged period of time to turn us into Kentucky in culture.
Yeah, his example is a 2 to 3 year period, and that is too short.
Too short, yeah.
All right, and next up from Bill Miner, who says, it's another what if.
Oh, yes.
He says, guys, since you seem to be enjoying the hypotheticals, imagine if Jetgate had actually succeeded and Bobby Petrino became the head coach in 2003. Please discuss what you think his tenure would have been like. Aside from who the football coach is, it also meant Walker would have remained president and may have prevented Googe and Leaf from ever taking the role. which as we know affects the team with contracts and such. Just crazy to think about how bad good things would have come out of it.
That's true. I hadn't thought about the further repercussions down the line. I mean, I have thought about like Petrino being the coach. I think that he would have been coach for about, what, 5 years, and then he would have gone to the Falcons or whatever, right?
He would have gone to the NFL, I think.
Yeah, he would have gone to the NFL after 4 or 5 years at Auburn, I think.
And so, again, but he would have been – this happened in
– 04 would have been his first year.
Right. So he happened at the end of 03. He was the offensive coordinator at Auburn in 02 and then left and went away, and we would have hired him back to be the head coach in 04 – I don't know if coming in with a new staff, he would have been able to get the team to play at the same level as the existing staff did in 04.
He would have had a hell of a team in terms of players, though.
I know that, and I think the offense would have been better. Yeah. I think the offense in 04, 05, 06, 07 would have been really good.
Yeah,
it would have been better than it was at the time. But he would have used the talent we had better. I'm just skeptical that he would have hired the same level of defensive coaches.
Yeah,
that we've had.
We'd have gotten by on the defense we had in 04, 05, and by 06 and 07, the defense would have been declining, I think. And right, then the whole thing would start coming apart, and he'd be gone to the NFL, and whoever we brought in 08 or in 8 or 9, maybe Chizik, because he was there.
Maybe it's Chizik anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it might very well have been. So
the William Walker thing's interesting because he would have stayed president longer and, again, prevented Googe from coming in, which, again, I really like.
I think that's basically it, is that the Petrino would have presided over what turned out to be the second half of Tuberville. And then after that, it might have just gone right back to how it actually played out. Interesting. Really interesting, huh?
Except that this is my – again, what we've seen from Bobby Petrino in other situations is when he leaves, it's bad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So maybe worse than late Tuberville bad.
We wouldn't have had the national championship in 2010.
Because I think the talent pool would have been drained more.
But yeah, it would have taken longer to build back up to that, and by then Cam's come and gone. Wouldn't have been here in the first place. So,
or came and didn't have the pieces around him to get there.
Yeah.
All right. Here's another question, another what if, from Dan Thompson. He says, just a hypothetical for some time in the offseason. In the 2013 Auburn-Georgia game, in the fourth quarter, Georgia took the lead off an Aaron Murray TD, even though he appeared to be stopped at the goal line of fourth down.
Amen.
If the officials had correctly called him down and Auburn took over at the 1 yard line, would Auburn have won the game at that point?
I can't remember how much time was left.
I can't either. I have to go back and watch this now.
All I know is they came right back down the field again after the miracle, and we tackled him inside the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
But no, but I agree, he did not score.
No, he did not score. But in some sense, what you're talking about didn't matter because they were going through us like a hot knife through butter.
Oh, second half. Yeah. The slants were killing us. We couldn't do anything to prevent them.
We could not stop them. And so I think it's really a question of when you say, would Auburn have won the game? It's would Auburn have run the ball and kept it away from Georgia? Is the only thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have serious doubts. So it's a good question. And horrifying.
It is a good question. And we got last one is from Gary Grant. And he sent you this email too, Van, so I want you to read it later.
By the way, didn't we get another what if from Billy? I can check real quick. I don't want to miss him.
All right,
you go ahead and do that when I look for
it. I read this. All right, so this is from Gary Grant, who says, hey guys, I've been planning to ask my question during the soft season, and in the last few weeks, you guys have been dancing around it with similar questions of what ifs. My question is, what would Gus Malzahn's legacy be if Cam Newton didn't come to Auburn? My original question was, what was Gus's legacy would have been if there was no Cam and no Nick Marshall? But I tend to believe that 2010 season hadn't happened with Cam, but did it ever happen? Gus may not have been in a position to move into a head coaching job, and even if he had taken the Arkansas State job, he likely wouldn't have created enough credibility with the Auburn fan base to return as Auburn coach when he did.
Agreed. Yeah, no, it had to play out exactly the way it did, and it was just one of those things where everything just lines up, and overcoming the almost losing everything with Cam oh, Lord, the whole, you know, scandal there for a little bit. But yeah, I mean, that, yeah, go ahead.
I just, you know, what is Gus's legacy without Cam Newton and Dick Marshall? I mean, what's Dabo Swinney's legacy without his two best quarterbacks, whatever? I just think, like, it's you know, what is, let's pick somebody, you know, besides Alabama, but, you know, what is, what's Urban Meyer's legacy without Tim Tebow and, you know,
LSU without Burrow, you know?
That's what I'm saying. I just, you know, those great players matter, and they matter more, but they're put in positions to succeed by good coaches, and he did it. So,
yeah.
And I think, again, we've talked about this a lot. We lose it, you know, early Gus Malzahn's offense was cutting edge. It was different. It was kept other teams off balance, and it really made a difference. And late Gus's offense and the lack of recruiting at some of those positions really did undermine it. But with the right players early, his early offense was, you know, again, unstoppable. We had, you know, half of, you know, other people coming in for them, and their offense rolled along. So he also sent some sound effects he wants you to include in the Hate Week template. So I want you to go back and look at that email.
Oh, good. Okay. I said Billy. I meant Richie. I said Butler made me think Billy. Richie Butler sent us one. He said, what if, and he's, of course, originated this little category here, and this, I guess, our last thing of the night. What if Auburn played USC in 2004 for the national championship? Would our defense have stopped their offense? Old Gene did a good job of it the next year at Texas. Would we have playoffs right now? In other words, if Auburn had gotten to play USC, would there even be the playoff system right now?
Well, again, if Auburn got to play him instead of Oklahoma, we'd have a playoff because Oklahoma would fuss forever about we deserve that shot.
Right, yeah.
Right, true. So there still would have been a big-time Power 5 undefeated school who got left out, and it would have fueled the playoff.
It would have just been deserving instead of undeserving, yes.
That's right. I'm an optimist. I believe Auburn would have won that game.
I do, too.
I believe, again, I think we played them tough in 2002. And I think, you know, we lost badly at home.
It wasn't as bad as everybody remembers, though. We've talked about this.
This is that. You're exactly right. The game, our defense did a great job in
that
game.
Yes,
but offensively, we could not move the ball. But we had a much better offensive coordinator in 2004.
Yes, 1,000 times better, yes. Yeah, it would have looked like the LSU game in 2004.
Yeah, it would have looked like that. It would have been a low-scoring, tough game, 14-13, something like that. But I think we could have beaten Southern Cal in 2004 with the way that team played. I think that Auburn team had a very, very high ceiling. Mm-hmm. And with properly motivated with the opportunity to go out and play them, I think they could have shown it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, if you played it 10 times, it might go 5-5. But I'm going to be optimistic and say that if you played it once, I think we could have won. I think we would have won.
Yes. And again, Oklahoma could not have won. They weren't going to beat us or Southern Cal.
So. Neither one. Not at all. No. All right. I'm done. I'm worn out. What about you? We got a lot more out of this show than I expected we would.
Well, now for part two, where we go another hour and a half.
We had a lot of odds and ends, but we had a lot of little odds and ends, so...
We did.
Good deal.
A full bucket of odds and ends.
A bucket load. All right. I think we're just going to wrap it up there. You good?
I'm good.
I'm going to bed. Well, I got to edit the show, but then I'm going to bed. All right. Our time is up. We thank you, viewers. What are you, John?
What are you, man?
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.